Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 154. This is Jamie Russo, and my guest today is Craig Bowdy, who is the founder of Creative Density Coworking in Denver, Colorado. He is also the founder of DenSwap, which is a platform to help people buy and sell coworking spaces. He is on the podcast today to share some insights from the 2019 Global Workspace Association Industry Financial Benchmarking Study. Craig was a lead researcher on the project. Before we dive into Craig, if you are thinking about starting a coworking space in 2020, I am hosting a masterclass, 3 behind-the-scenes secrets to creating a successful coworking business in 2020. I am going to give you the 3 factors that I've seen in all of my experience in coworking that are the difference makers for success, and they have nothing to do with startup budget. So I want to share those with you to help you think differently about what's important in terms of starting a coworking space and get you started off on the right foot. If you are interested in attending the class, it'll be an hour. We'll go through the content and save some room for Q&A. You can register at everythingcoworking.com/masterclass. I would love to see you there. And now here's my conversation with Craig. Cloud. All right. I am here today with Craig Bowdy, who has many hats, just like I do. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Craig and I have been catching up on our pre-chat, and Craig has a lot going on. Before I start, we are here today to talk about the highlights from the 2019 GWA Industry Benchmark Survey. So the data is from 2019, and Craig was our data analyst and highlighter. And Craig, you can talk about kind of what else you want to highlight about your input into the survey. The survey is an incredible amount of work. So the GWA has run this financial survey for years and years and years. And we started doing it every 2 years because it's so much work for operators to give us their data. It's really unique in that it's the only survey out there that asks for really detailed financial data. So it's not just questions like, are you profitable, but what's your revenue per square foot? And it kind of really digs into a lot of information. And then it's a lot to unpack when it comes in. And so Craig can talk about his many hats, but he's a market research background. And so we reached out and said, Craig, would you help us with this? And he said, absolutely. So he did the write-up for us, and we're going to go through some highlights today. So a little bit more about Craig. Craig is the owner of Creative Density, which has a number of locations in the Denver area. He is also now the proud owner of a co-working space in Chicago, which I'll let him talk about. And he started a website to help people find and sell co-working businesses called DenSwap. And he's heavily involved with Denver Coworks, which is a coalition for co-working spaces in Denver. He said he just started the one for Chicago. So Craig is busy. All the links to find Craig and all the things that he does are in the show notes. So pop over there, everythingcoworking.com/episode154, and you can find all that detail. Craig, thank you for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. What else? What did I miss? What do you want to add to your intro?
I really think that's it. it all intertwines to really being an experienced co-working operator and consultant. And then it's like, how do you turn that information into just more ways to help people? I mean, which you obviously kind of follow that exact same path.
Yeah, so, a lot of insights. When did you start Creative Density?
2011.
Yeah, so you've been doing this for a while.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And before that, I was a market researcher. And so it's always kind of been fun to kind of merge those two worlds.
Totally. Yep. So. And you also, at some point you can share a little bit more about the kinds of things you help people with. And you're in Chicago today. So Craig does have a podcast studio in one of his locations in Denver, but he's just in a regular conference room hanging out in Chicago today.
Yeah. Hope I sound great. I sound perfect. I'm a little Barbara Streisand on a podcast.
Ooh, nice. But,
you know.
Awesome. So Craig, let's maybe at the end, we'll talk about DenSwap and a couple of other things a little bit, because I think folks will be interested in that. Let's hit the highlights on the 2019 survey. So a couple of notes, if you want to get the very detailed version of the survey, you can, there's a link in the show notes. You can go to the GWA website under resources. It's very expensive if you buy it a la carte. Our members get it for free by joining for $2.97. So we're just going to give you the highlights, but we're not going to give away all the juicy details. You have to join or buy the survey for that. Craig, let's talk about, so you and I talked a little bit when we were kind of setting up how we wanted to go through this about the fact that you thought, you know, really the insights that came out of this were not necessarily heavily impacted by COVID-19. So kind of the trends will continue, maybe not a lot that isn't still relevant.
No. And in fact, Scott Galloway, this he's an Ivy League business professor, and he describes COVID-19 as just an accelerant on business trends.
Yeah.
That's like looking 10, what we did is we looked 10 years out and basically all of that kind of got pushed forward.
Yep.
And co-working trends were already happening. And I think it's just an accelerant to the current space owners right now. I think people's worlds are going to be there. Everyone's going to be on a much stronger position in 6 months. It is just surviving for the next 6 months. But you can do it. And when we come out of it, I think co-working is going to be on very strong footing.
Yeah. Craig and I are the co-working Kool-Aid drinkers, by the way. So be prepared that we're biased, but we both see a lot of what's happening in the marketplace. And so I think our optimism is not unwarranted. It is grounded in reality. And Craig's sitting in a co-working space that you bought in
January of 2020.
Yes. Great timing.
And
he's still optimistic. He's hanging in there and expects some good demand. And we see some really strong indicators. Texas is open. I talked to operators in Texas. They're getting really strong leads. Google search results are up. So it's really market by market right now. But it'll happen depending on kind of where your market is with reopening. So let's kind of talk about, Craig, you've been doing this for 9 years. I've been doing this for 8 years. The data that we collected, we cut it by, we ask for the size of the space so that we can cut some of the data by size. I will say this about the data, because Craig, you're a market researcher. You know, I have graduate level statistics classes. I get super anal about like sample size and is this statistically relevant? And I need to kind of get over that, because if you ever look at, you know, some of the reports the brokerages put out and whatnot, like the sample sizes are always pretty small, because it's hard to get data. Mm-hmm. And so ours, it's in the, like, I don't know, 300-ish operators responded. So it's a pretty good sample size. But any of the data that's cut is not a huge sample of any segment. So we're drawing some conclusions and kind of talking over some of the data. And we might talk about, like, you know, what we think is probably right and what might be a little bit wonky.
Yeah. In fact, Jamie, we cut out a lot of the data that was too small of a sample size.
Yeah.
And so
for the report. Perfect.
Yeah. For the report.
That's why we hire people like Craig who know how to make this happen.
We narrowed the category down to just really co-working and serviced offices. So if you compare this to some of the previous reports, know that some categories were left out because sample size, we want that to be relevant. So we have stronger data.
It's important. I would just also overlay that even, you know, it's not a sample size of all the operators out there. If you're starting a business or kind of looking at your business, there's still some good trends and still some good insights that you can draw from it. And any benchmarking data is helpful. So let's talk about the size of co-working spaces and how sizes have evolved. Feel free to voice over just in general in your experience, but also what we saw come out of the data.
So this was a big shift from 2017 to 2019. So sizes is the actual physical footprint, the square footage of a co-working space. And in previous years, the sizes of co-working spaces were gradually going up, but this time the data really showed that there's a dumbbell effect happening to where there's a lot of spaces. In fact, it was 47% of spaces are less than 10,000 square feet, and now 26% of spaces are over 30,000 square feet. So the middle is getting more hollowed out, and there's large spaces at 30,000 square feet, and then there's more less than 10,000 square feet, which is probably most likely independent operators.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my coloring in on that would be there's a lot of folks still going into new markets. I mean, it's a, I know, you know, you do feasibility studies, and it's really interesting to see when people find markets that are just still really underserved in general by even serviced office spaces or co-working. I think those of us who are in it tend to think it's everywhere. It's still not. But when folks go into a, you know, a newer and smaller market, right, they'll start with the sub 10,000 square foot space and kind of test it out and feel out the market and kind of warm up. And then you, I think in the urban areas, you know, kind of one of the approaches is unless you're, if you're in a CBD, like downtown, you know, or kind of in the core business district, you kind of have to go in and go big in order to serve your client.
In fact, in this data, it shows that in cities above 1 million, only 18% of spaces are less than 10,000 square feet.
Yeah. So that's a great example. It's like, it's kind of hard to do the smaller independent space in a larger market. And
And so when people are going over that 30,000 square feet, they've also have a tendency to go towards the premium price. Yeah. So these are people, basically what this is saying is that it's companies with money are really taking a swing at co-working as a major trend that's going to replace commercial real estate. And so they're spending millions of dollars to start these new spaces. So they're either CRE companies starting their own brands, or they're, as we know, venture capital backed spaces that have the money to swing big, to take some losses for a few years, and then grow a larger business on top of that. And so that has been the biggest trend going forward, are multi-floor 30,000 square foot spaces or larger.
Yeah, and I think that also has something to do with this bet on sort of that corporate client coming in and taking more flexible space, taking, you know, suite type offices, team spaces. And I think it'll be interesting to see how this plays out sort of in the CBD. I think we see that happening, but will that sort of shift out to the suburbs, and will that demand disperse a little bit into independent operators versus, you know, we're putting all 60 people in a, you know, 4,000 square foot space, you know, that we're flexible space that an operator is managing. Will that survive?
That brings us to like another big trend with these larger spaces is that it's teams above 10, 25 people are really starting to enter the co-working space. And this is changing the way that some floor plans of co-working spaces, because it's not, you know, a few years ago, if a team of 20 would have come into a co-working space, they might have grabbed 4 to 10 offices next to each other. Now there's suites being built out that are attached to a co-working space, but kind of that company's own space that they can kind of brand and make their own. And inside that suite might be like 3 private offices, some open hot desking, a kitchen, and a conference room that then they open the door and they walk into the larger co-working space.
Yeah. When you describe that, I'm picturing, have you been in the Novel location in Denver?
Yes.
Yeah. That's exactly
Novel,
what.
Yeah. So Novel traditionally, they buy their buildings and
they'll buy 50,000 square feet, right? Yeah.
Yes. And that's in Denver. That was actually what caught everyone onto this trend. And then all the other spaces were like, yeah, like this, we're seeing that same demand. There's another co-working space in Denver that Facebook ended up grabbing some temporary office space from them for a year, why they built out their larger. And so at GWA last year, someone was speaking about they go into a market and want to hire some people, but they're kind of like testing out that market before they go full blown on it and hire a few hundred people. They've been entering into the co-working market to test it out, to see hire 20, 30 people and see if it's a good market fit for the talent that they're looking for.
Yep.
So co-working spaces are starting to see that trend.
Play that role. And I think that to your point, you know, to your point in the introduction, will continue to accelerate, because I think now the mindset may even be, do we ever need our own space? Or the, you know, the bar for when, what the trigger is for getting your own space may just be different, because now some people are at home, some people are at the space. Do we want a big corporate headquarters? You know, that may even look different going forward.
And the trend of the 30,000 square foot space or larger really allows to accommodate these larger teams. Whereas 10,000 square foot spaces really, really don't, because then you're handing your entire culture kind of over to this larger team. And for co-working space operators, that's something that you kind of need to be cautious of doing. You need to be hold your culture tight. And I want people to understand that when I say co-working, I'm generally talking about the whole shared office space industry. If I say co-working versus serviced office centers, then there's a distinction. But generally when I'm saying co-working, I'm kind of talking about the whole shared office.
That's a great point. We should be clear about that. That word has become sort of all encompassing, and there's always debate over, do we call it flexible office or shared office or what it's called. But the media generally still calls it co-working. So we go with that.
Yeah. And another thing I wanted to say about the changes in size of co-working spaces is that it really does determine on your market. And we kind of alluded to this earlier, but in cities less than 100,000 people, it's 82% of the spaces are less than 10,000 square feet. And then in cities from 100 to 500,000, it's 55% of spaces are under 10,000 square feet. And that's where we get to, once you're over 1,000,000, it's only 18%. So there is a scale of the number of 10,000 square foot spaces on the size of the city.
Yep. And I wonder if it'll be interesting to see in the next year or two, if the spaces get larger in some of the smaller markets, as that demand is kind of proven out, and as the segments of folks who used to commute every day, you know, maybe don't commute anymore. And so those markets can support larger spaces.
I absolutely agree. And it's the chains that are growing, like these local chains, as people start to get 4, 5, 10 locations, they're really looking at the space size from 15 to like 25,000 square feet. And that's because they can enter into markets that the big players aren't looking at. And so really the chains that are growing that you might not have heard of, they're looking at that 15 to 25,000, because under 10,000 square feet is very difficult to operate when you have layers of management. But when you have scale and you have more confidence and experience, you kind of go up a little bit higher, but the big players kind of put a ceiling at how hard you want to go.
But also, you know, they're in markets where it's more likely you're not going to get, you know, maybe an Industrious or a WeWork, you know, people who really operate at those larger square footage, but the 15 to 25,000, to your point, can be a really nice profitable space, especially when you have the scale of some of multiple locations with some centralized competencies like marketing and finance. And yeah, you can have all those hats with different people when you only have one 10,000 square foot space.
Yeah. In fact, you want to think about when your different size of spaces are going to have different target markets and radius. So when you're under 10,000 square feet, you're generally like a neighborhood space. And according to other research, like from DeskMeg, it's people generally drive or commute, whatever way, 18 minutes to their co-working space. And so that sub 10,000 really serves that neighborhood. Yep. And then when you get too large of a space, you need to go into the downtown, to the CBDs, because then you need to attract people from all parts of the city and downtowns are centrally located.
Yeah.
That's why then they are allowed to get bigger.
Yep.
So if you're out in the suburb, you can go, you need to think about like, okay, what's my 18 minute radius? And then how many people can I serve? So don't try to swing, oh, there's 30,000 square feet out in the suburbs. You're not going to get that. Once a company's too big, they need to kind of move downtown because they need to recruit from all of the suburbs, not just maybe the south side suburbs where they're originally located.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Teams, desk, suites.
Those are the big takeaways from the size things. Another change that big shift that I saw in the research was how. Now I'm going to talk about the difference between co-working and serviced office centers, how they generate revenue, how it makes up. Although their floor plan is generally the same, co-working spaces now, 89% of them provide private offices versus 100% for serviced offices. But where they make money is still very different. And we could learn a lot from each other, the two different worlds. The biggest, most obvious one is virtual mail. Co-working spaces, people that identify as co-working spaces in the survey, so everyone's self-identified, only get 3% of their revenue from virtual mail. Which is shocking because around 68% of them say that they offer virtual mail. So 68% say they offer it, but only 3% of their revenue comes from it. Versus serviced office centers, nearly all of them provide virtual mail and it gets 22% of their revenue.
Yeah, that's a marked difference in the, you know, the focus and operation. And we can talk about some of the things that play into that. But yeah, it's a really interesting insight for the co-working folks that are listening.
Yeah. So if you're in the co-working world and you're not doing virtual mail, know that that's an opportunity for growth. The service office sector had other opportunities for growth that they could learn from the co-working world. And that is dedicated desks and hot desks. So pretty much once again, all of them say that they offer it, but for serviced office centers, their tenure for dedicated desks and hot desks, so how long a member stays with them, is in the single digits. We're generally, it's always hovering around 4 to 6 months someone's there. So the lifetime value of that hot desking member is nothing compared to co-working, to where it's generally 12 or 15 months for a co-working member. So serviced office centers could do better serving dedicated desks or hot desks a little bit more and serving those customers more. That's a growth opportunity. There's reasons why neither one of these camps are kind of leaning to the virtual mail or the service offices going to the hot desks. And that's a cultural and or a way that they originally structured their business. And they need to know that there's opportunity there and then develop the processes and the promotion and the sales, also the sales process to get the word out and then know how to handle it so it's not a headache. Because I know as a co-working space operator, I was hesitant of virtual mail for many years. And I just kind of put myself up on like the DaVinci's and the Anytime Mails and iPostals and Sphere Mail. And I would get it a customer trickle in maybe once every 3 months or so. And I would love the money, but I would also kind of groaned of like the process that it took. It's like, oh, now I need to look out for Robert's mail. And I wasn't used to looking out for it. And I just needed to get over that hurdle of saying, oh, what if I promoted this service? What if I made sure I sign up for several of these? And I just learned myself how to do it. Like all I had to do was create a list of like this person, like look out for this name before I throw
the Excel
it away.
Spreadsheets and all the different names that mail might come in for.
As a co-working space, you get junk mail from all these
so much. Yeah.
People that are just like Google mapping you and saying like, Mr. I don't want to Windows company. I just know that there's one guy at Creative Density. That's like, and I'm like, who are you? And I kind of get a little bit of glee. I get anger that he's just using my address. And then I'm like, you're never going to see this name.
Right.
And then I like throw it away.
Return to sender.
Yeah, exactly.
Take that.
Yeah. There was an education that, hey, stick with it. And this can be meaningful revenue. And, you know, just in your mind, dear co-working space owner, if you're thinking about virtual mail, take that whatever you're making per month and times it by 12 and just turn it into annualized revenue. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, this is suddenly $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 a year in revenue. So don't just view it as like, oh, it's $300. You know, I'd rather just sign up a hot desking member. Immediately take that 300 and times it by 12. And you're like, oh, that's $3,600 a year for me looking out for three people's mail. Like, I can do that. That yeah. can ride me through COVID. And then right. when I emerge out of COVID, like, I have a whole new revenue stream.
Yeah. I think that's one of the big themes from COVID for the folks who were not doing virtual mail is a bigger focus on, okay, how do I figure this out? It's not a silver bullet though. You know, as you said, it takes some time to build and you have to sort of have some optimism and put the processes in place and believe in it and stick with it so that it has the opportunity to build before you just throw in the towel and say, you know, this is a pain. I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that opportunity again is going to be accelerated because people aren't going to have an office where they can get any mail that they want. You know, everything has to come home. And they're going to be people who really want a business address. I mean, there are legal reasons. We won't go into a big training on virtual mail, yeah. but I think, you know, Craig was at the GWA conference, the in-person conference last year. And there was a session where we were talking about, I don't even think it was about mail, but Keith Warner from Pacific Workplaces stood up and said, you know, we basically pay our rent with our virtual mail program and, you know, head swing over to Keith, yeah. like what, you know, it can depend on your address. And it also can depend on the member that you serve. And I think that's an important thing when you're thinking about revenue streams, if you're a serviced office, that's how you identify yourself. And you're thinking about switching, you know, adding hot desks or dedicated desks, you know, or your co-working space, thinking about doing virtual mail. Go through the exercise of thinking hard about who your perfect member is and who you serve and how can you do that your way in a way that fits your culture. So the serviced office folks, you know, you mentioned a lower tenure of hot desks. And maybe it's because the offering just doesn't quite fit the member. So mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that there's not an offering that makes sense. Is it in the right location? Is it the right furniture? Is it, you know, the right amount of privacy? You know, there could be a lot of things there to figure out. You can't just, you know, drop a product into a culture where it's not a fit. And I think, you know, one of the really key success factors is in the first thing I teach in my co-working startup school is like, you have to know who you're serving. And, you know, Craig, you have some very diverse spaces in your portfolio. You serve some different members, you know, and differently, I would guess. And there are some common themes, I would guess, in how you serve them. But you kind of yeah. know like who fits where, and not all of your members would fit in your other spaces.
No. And we're trying to work through that. What does a brand mean? But we do know that like we have to change the language up on the landing pages. So when you go to different locations, so it emphasizes different features. So we're talking about this, I recently went from two to like five locations over the course of a year. And I had to work with branding of like, how do we take a step back and make this a brand so it's cohesive? What do I need to change up with my locations so that I'm constantly speaking to kind of the right person mm-hmm. with enough wiggle room, I guess.
Yeah. But the types of locations, because you did you still have the space that's mostly offices?
Yes.
And you yep. have a space with no offices, your original space.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
And then you've got the one in the apartment building. I don't know what that like.
Yeah. That
which
one's
is
a lot of
totally,
offices. It's, yeah. And it's built out more at a premium level.
Okay.
And so I had to sit back and say, who's my customer? And then how could I actually make, because all of my spaces are neighborhood spaces. So I don't need to go fully generic. I only need to capture that 50 people in that area. So we're actually adding podcasting studios to each location so that we're have a consistency of like, oh, Creative Density, that's the one with podcasting studios. And then we created a locker full of gear. So anyone can rent out like drones or cameras or something.
Ooh,
to kind of like,
I want to rent a drone. I've exactly. never heard anybody mention that. I love that idea.
And so that's because now I have four locations. So I can do stuff like that and then just keep it at one location or have the community manager come and pick it up.
Rotate it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but everyone gets access. So it's like, I'm creating the Creative Density brand for like, oh yeah, that's like, kind of, and that's for creatives or people that have this, like, you know, people like me.
Right.
Like,
so you're a type of person. And so they might need, like, the feature they need might be different. I need an office versus a space in a house. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, your original space is super unique and different from the other spaces that you've created. But there's a mind, it sounds like you're speaking to a common mindset.
Yeah.
I like to have fun. I'm hearing that, you know, I like to do different things. I know you do like kickball tournaments and like, I like to be a part of a community, even if I need an office. So your language probably speaks to that. And we're getting into like marketing talk. But my point was, if you're a serviced office, like know who you're speaking to and create the product that matches that. You know, don't do hot desk just because it's the cool thing to do. Find a way to fit it into what your members want and need.
In fact, so to wrap it into the virtual mail thing, the thing I love about virtual mail and is that it does not affect my culture.
Totally, because you almost never see the people. Yeah,
exactly. It's right. A service I provide for my hot desking members because they need to receive mail. I'm already doing that, but I can sell it out to outsiders and they're not going to affect my community. And so it's like everyone can just add that on.
You don't have to sort of worry about how that fits in. And I think some like really pure co-working people are like, I don't want to do that because it has nothing. It doesn't build my community.
Right.
And but makes, it gives you the budget to support your community. Yeah. I mean, why not?
That's the reality to it. But so like the serviced office people centers of not having hot desking and dedicated desks, I kind of get why that's a struggle because then that's a cultural shift. That's why the 10-year is lower is because you're providing desks, but it's not your core competency. You're really going after an office culture there.
Yep.
And so you're really serving the need of space. I need a desk.
And
that's kind of more of a transition phase.
Yep.
But if serviced office centers wanted to kind of grow into that, know that you will have to change your mindset a little bit. You're going to have to change your market positioning a little bit, but that is an opportunity for growth that's out there. So as we all kind of just look at reevaluate things during COVID, know that that is something that you could do. You just have to do it with intention because before it probably was done without intention. Now it needs to be done. Yep. We discussed it as it's the difference between apartment culture and dorm culture. And you're going to need to add, like serviced office centers are a little bit, they're apartment culture. And then co-working spaces are a little bit more dorm culture. Functionally, they're the same thing. It's just how they approach things are different.
Yep. Totally makes sense. Should we talk about marketing? Since we were talking about marketing, let's talk about marketing.
Yeah.
Let's officially talk about marketing and what the data says. And I always love this section because I think this is one of the biggest questions on operators' minds. Like if you already have a space, you're like, well, what's everybody else, you know, doing that works? How do you attract members? You know, and once you get them in the door, most of us, you know, we talked about some of the 10-year data. Which isn't in our notes. I could pull it from the actual study, but tenure is longer than folks think. I mean, on average, it's closer to a year across all products. I mean, I just closed my space in May. I had members that had been there for all 7 years of my lease, you know?
Right.
you have that too, I'm sure. Like they're there the whole time. They stayed and stayed. And so, so the tenure, We know how to retain generally, but it's like, how do you attract people and build your business? And if you're, you know, opening, expanding a new space, you know, kind of what's working for folks. So I'll let you kind of jump into some of the insights from the data.
And So the marketing tactics was another one of these breaking points between co-working and serviced office centers. It was once again, just how they approach what they offer. And co-working goes much more grassroots, and serviced office centers, what I call I didn't come up with this term, but the lumberjack strategy. They rely on their partners a lot more. Online platforms like Liquid Space, yep, and UpSuite and DaVinci, or online brokers. So I don't know, like Instant Off.
Yeah, yep. Freedom Office.
Instant offices, yep, and stuff. So they make sure that they're listed all of those places and then pay people for when a sale is completed. So they might pay a higher price.
Yeah.
They only pay when a lead comes in. Co-working, on the other hand, is much more like the local, like they go at it like a restaurant type thing of like, I'm going to pay for Google ads. I'm going to get the word out there. I'm going to join groups. I'm going to do paid social media and unpaid social media and kind of build up this awareness. And then, so there's two different approaches. One is I'm going to build my own awareness. And the other one is I'm going to tell people that are talking to all of these people about me and let them talk about me.
I wonder if, again, we can't, you know, with the smaller data set, it's hard to cut really granularly. But I wonder if one of the other differences is that if you have a larger space in a larger market, it's more competitive and you have to be on the partner sites and you have to be spending on Google ads. Whereas some of the smaller spaces in newer markets, you know, I have folks in my, you know, co-working startup school, they flip into like a mastermind program and we talk a lot about marketing. They can't, it's hard for them to spend on Google ads because their market is not, you know, there's just not enough search volume, there's not enough competition, and they're already, you know, organically, they're coming up on, you know, in the first three slots. So they have to do, you know, sort of the grassrootsy, you know, get on the local blogs and do the social media and have 100 events in the space every week. And
that's a good point from my not from the data set, but from just in-person conversations.
Yeah.
Brokers and those partners work better for larger spaces because they're talking to larger teams. And so you need to be able to accommodate that.
Yep. Although, so that I think is generally true. Except we had Instant on our virtual conference a couple of weeks ago, and I talked to the CEO and I asked him what their average team size is. Maybe it's not their average, but their median placement is like 1 to 5 seats.
Wow.
Yeah. So on average, they're probably much higher. Like they get the 30-person teams. For sure. Yeah. Like 30 person teams don't come through Google, right? They're coming through an Instant or Freedom Office or a Liquid Space. They're not coming off the street from a Yelp or a Google review. And they typically need more space.
Yeah. And so I just kind of, I wanted to kind of hammer down just the top five.
Yeah.
And so we can kind of just get this compare and contrast. So co-working spaces, number one way that the most effective a method of marketing is member referrals. Number two is hosting events. Three, paid digital media. That also includes Google. So that's Google and social media. And so then number four most effective is unpaid social media. And number five is networking groups and community groups, and that's your like economic development and other forms. Now we switched over to serviced offices. Same number one. Member referrals, number one. Number two, social media unpaid. Three, paid digital media. And then four and five are online platforms and lead platforms. But number one for both are member referrals. As a space owner, I don't have any member referral program. And this really kind of just
was like, can I get my pen and write a note? Because, and I've seen this data 100 times and people talk about, I think people just get stuck. Like, don't people tell their friends because they like where they work?
But, co-working spaces say it's 71% effective.
Yeah.
And serviced office centers say it's 50% effective. So I mean, I guess they're a lot more willing to talk if they're going to get maybe a little kickback or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think, or just to remind folks to share and to bring
it
up.
I think that's it. To remind
yeah.
people.
I know when we do tours, I'm sure you're like this too. We've never had anything formal in place, but when we do tours and somebody like knows another member, we know when they're in, you know, there's no way they're not joining. They know Joe. Of course they're in. Yeah.
It's like their community is already here.
Right. Right. They feel at home. We don't have to sell them and show them that they're going to feel at home. They can see because they know they're going to like it if Joe's here.
So some things that did fall in the marketing was unpaid social media. And I think that is, social media is harder than what people expect it to be. And you need to have intention beforehand. Now there's a lot of spaces that have a brand strategy with their social media. Whereas before it was just like, I don't know, just send some photos and put it out there and people will come. But with competition, social media also has a lot of competition. There's five spaces that they're looking at social media. One that everyone agrees just is ineffective is print media. And honestly, the data is what it is. I think...
but Craig's going to argue a little bit about this.
I think
one.
People just do crappy print media.
Yeah. I thought about that too with just this new market, because you and I talked at the beginning, we've got this new segment of people who are working at some sort of corporate office, and it's not necessarily that they're working at Facebook. We're talking like lots of smaller companies that are like, they don't know about co-working. And I just wonder, is this the time to bring back like the zip code mailer?
Honestly, and pay a designer and do it right. And you can be so targeted with print mailers. But I think people just don't think outside the box. I think they do the cheapest postcard possible. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, a Google click costs in Denver $28.
Right. In a competitive market, it's super Chicago. I don't know if you've looked for Chicago. Chicago was always the same way. Really competitive. It was super expensive. Yep.
Yeah, but a huge flyer, and we're talking bigger than what you expect, is 80 cents mailed to a targeted person. So, I can do 100 of those for $800. Wait, is that 100 of those for $80? Way better price. And that would be only around like 3 clicks on Google. And I can probably do a better job with that by hiring a branding company or a marketing company. Or it's just another one of those, hey, you need to have 7 touch points before someone remembers you.
Yeah. It needs to be part of your sales funnel. So you need a way to track it. You need a landing page for people. You need a way for them to get to you and to know, because I wonder if that's kind of part of it. People don't know how to manage something that goes out in the mail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when if you're only hitting people, you hit this point that are searching for co-working. Well, they already know about co-working. And the mailer is growing the audience.
Yeah.
People that don't know about co-working.
Yep. Suggesting, especially right now. Hey, got a spouse at home that's making you crazy?
Yeah, exactly.
Come on down the street. We have a spot for you.
Our tagline is 100% less kid noise.
Nice.
And so it's just, we're reinforcing that.
I love it. I want to hit on the social media piece because I coach people a lot on this, and I'm not sure if people take my advice or not. I think it's table stakes. To your point, I think when people look at a space, if they're trying to feel like, do I fit here? When it's not just about the space, when you're selling, more a community, how I feel when I go to work every day, what's happening there, who are the other people in the space? Social media is your way to show that off, right? Or your newsletter.
Absolutely.
It's hard to see those things on a tour. So I think you have to do them. But I always warn people, don't have your community manager spending 2 hours a day on social media, because I'm not sure the ROI is there. And we have to remember, I'm sure you know this, what is it, like 10% of your followers see any post max that's an organic post?
Yeah, I promote half the posts. I'm like, for $5, boom. Just like,
I will caution that boosting, it may work. But I think simple Facebook ads training to know how to manage a little bit of a Facebook budget And I know you've done some research on, you know, Facebook mm-hmm. ads work in some markets, don't work in other markets. My startup school students and my flight group students talk about this all the time. We'll have people like killing it on Facebook and other people who are pretty experienced marketers. And we'll say, you know, Facebook leads are not nearly as high quality as Google. But again, it's another point where this may be the time to be just amplifying awareness of your solution, because people are searching on Google. They're not searching on Facebook. You have to kind of get in front of them, but it may be worth a little bit of spend.
And
just to make
lower,
sure you're,
to lower yeah, go that ahead. Risk of like Facebook ads, because Facebook targeting for coworking has been difficult, and same with display yeah. ads in general. One way to make that really safe is to just only pay for retargeting of
yeah.
ad. So
Love
it's
it.
Like once they come, I can pay them. I can pay that high price in Google, get them to my site. Yeah, maybe they'll leave and it will be a bounce, but then I know they're interested. And now I'm showing them ads for only 15 cents a click yeah. on Facebook or Google. Yeah. And so you have to have a bit of a strategy on it. That means we have a suburban space in the north suburbs of Denver where Facebook does wonders. But to your point, it's also not a lot of people searching for coworking on Google up there. Yeah. So Facebook is our better strategy.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you just have to test, which I think that was kind of the point of the research that you did. Like, you know, it's worth testing and trying and figuring out, you know, what strategy works for you. But I think the unpaid can be challenging just because the reach can be so low.
Yes. And for social media, I think a lot of spaces for like, it hangs out there. It's there for a very long time and people can see it. So if you're going to post on social media, make sure it's quality. Because
no pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. But man, like I had to clean up Crave Density's social media feed maybe about 3 years ago because I, you know, was more willy-nilly just posting. I was like, oh, we just need to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Everything. And then I had several members that are like, dude, clean that. Professional photo, like do more professional photos.
Yeah.
Like you have way too many of your photos are from an Android phone of 2012. You're like, this has been a
Craig,
while.
Get
like,
a new phone, do yeah, a exactly. photo shoot.
And I did it. Honestly, it looks great. And I was like, I'm proud of it. And I think it represents a lot more because you look at the people that watch videos on, social media, and it's like the view count will go quickly get into.
Oh, videos are huge.
Thousands.
Yeah, and which is why you were talking about my background. I was like, yeah, well, I do this all the time because videos like get the action, you know, on Facebook and Instagram. That's and the algorithm loves it. So, but again, yeah. you have to be careful about what you're doing. It has to be professional and meaningful. It can't just be, you know, I don't know. Although I'd watch a video of your kickball game, the highlights.
Yeah, right. And it hangs out there and you can repurpose it. Yeah. So, but back to the data, unpaid yeah. social media is losing love in the overall industry. But yeah. I think don't give up on it. Just like with print media, we just have to have more intention with it. I think a lot of people were sending out like pizza type flyer coupons of like, hey, new pizza yeah. joint, take $5 right. off. And you're like, yeah. that doesn't work with coworking. As you have to have more intention behind it and purpose. So those are the big takeaways. But member referrals, if you're not doing member referrals, that's the most effective way according to our data.
So start your virtual mail program, start your member referral program, and things will start looking up.
Yeah, it's I think so.
Awesome. So, yeah, I mean, these are some great highlights and there's a lot of good detail that we didn't get through that's in the full report. So you can grab that at the globalworkspace.org under resources. Craig, let's just spend a couple minutes talking about tell us about DenSwap.
So DenSwap is, there's a few of us doing DenSwap and it launched last September, actually at GWA's conference was our big coming out.
Oh, party. Good.
Yeah, and so it's a marketplace for people to buy and sell co-working businesses. Now that the co-working world's been around for about 10 years, there's now people that are thinking about succession planning of like, boy, I didn't mean for this to be my lifetime thing. I just wanted this to be a side business while I did this thing, or I need to move or my lifestyle's changed.
Yeah.
And how do I built up this beautiful community, but I don't want to just close it down. You know, that would break my heart.
Yeah.
And then you just tell all your friends that you've made to go away. And you're like, wait, you built a business here. You spent money on this. It, you know, it's mostly, it's probably, it could be profitable and worth a lot of money. So we try to ease that friction to help people hand it over to the next generation of space owners. And then we also work with property owners that want co-working spaces inside. So we really try to be a matchmaker from property owners with maybe spaces that are doing operation management contracts so that they can do a joint venture or something. We use our co-working consulting caps on, and we try to help guide people to make that best match. And we've built a lot of cool tools. So like a lot of free tools. We have an instant profit and loss calculator to kind of get a gut check on a space. We have the co-working valuation calculator. You input a answer about 10 questions, and we tell you how much we think your space could be worth. And then we have the co-working heat map, which is coworkingheatmap.com. And we do a Google basically map search, and we mapped out every single co-working space in cities above 20,000 in America. And there's a whole bunch of filters. And you can just go in and start playing around and poking around different cities to see where co-working spaces are and what style of co-working spaces they are. We did over 5,000 entries and categorized each one to whether it's like a chain, an executive suite, traditional co-working. So we put a lot, it's a very valuable tool. And so I hope people take advantage of it.
Yeah, I love it. Well, and I love the buy sell platform because there's really nothing out there. And I think it's a unique business. And so bringing, you know, having a place where people can list their business and find people who want to get into the business. If Craig doesn't buy all the locations himself.
Well, we think about our style.
You know, there's some good deals on there when Craig's so, like taking some of them.
So many years ago. It's like, how much less risky is it to buy a co-working space then start a co-working space? You're like, if you go into it and you're like, God, this feels good, you know, in here, you're like, I want to build this. And what if it's like, well, here, you can have it, you know, like, yeah, it's for sale.
The poor guy that put all the hard work into like filling, you know, from scratch and the
before he had to close it down, maybe he'll get, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
For it. And so that's a whole new mindset. I know it's like when you do your startup school, it costs well over $100,000, $500,000 to often start a co-working space. And you're hoping to build a community. This is a chance, you know, hopefully for you to be like, I love this community. I want to put some elbow grease into this and turn it into something special.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm excited about DenseSwap and the property management matchmaking. I think it needs a new voice inside of there to let people know that this is an option. Like, to do a joint venture together with a co-working space operator.
Yeah, especially it's a local.
Trend.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the trend. And especially during COVID, there's going to be a lot of empty retail spaces and just commercial office space that would be appropriate for co-working.
Yeah, I love the potential retail space because I think some spaces even that are maybe typically too small, like just maybe repurposed, it may be the time and you can find a way to scale it, you know, have enough of them kind of around an area.
I've always loved this model to where it's like you have like five retail spots kind of throughout a downtown. They're all like 2,000 square foot spaces. And then you get one membership to one of them. And there's like conference rooms and drop-in spaces.
Wherever you need to be. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, there's a space for you.
Right. And you have some floating staff. It's like a little bit of a different model, but you could do it and make it happen. And I think we'll probably see that with the retail space that's open.
I've always loved that concept. I think I wrote a love letter blog to the concept, like, because Cove tried to do this like 2012, yep, something like that.
Yep.
And I wrote a love letter blog post to the concept back then. And I hope that happens. There's an idea out there for anyone listening.
Totally. Well, the Cove is a good model. And I wonder if they'll start to scale that a little bit more. They've gone into software, I think.
Yeah, I knew that they were kind of abandoning that.
Yeah, but I know I always liked it too. I was like super smart, just kind of useful. And you just have to manage the community aspect carefully since it's kind of transient. Yeah,
there's lessons to learn. Yeah. And I still love it. I would pen that letter again.
You know? We might see it. You might do it. Who knows? Craig?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing your insights. Thank you for all the work that you did on helping us put this out. And for everybody listening, if you didn't fill it out, we would love next time when you get this in your inbox, give us your data. Because the more data we get, the more useful it is for everyone.
100%. This is the best data set. And we could always use more of it. Dedicate 30 minutes, you know, and be honest.
Right. Totally. It's anonymous. It's totally
anonymous. Yeah, it's anonymous. So. Yeah.
This year we gave out, Staples sponsored it, and we did two, like the fancy touchscreen laptops. We drew names out of those who filled it out. So there is some upside in addition to just access to data.
And just knowing that you're contributing to the common good.
Exactly. Craig, I have your contact info in the show notes, but if somebody wants to find you, what's the easiest place for them to go?
Craig at Creative Density or Craig at denswap.com.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. Thanks for joining us today, Craig.
Absolutely. Thank you.